up, Yap Squad, and welcome to our very first recap, or re-yap, as we like to call it, of the first two episodes of The Acolyte, because they released this week, and you heard it here first. I don't know what you heard here first. I lost my train of thought. Anyway, the premiere was this week, and we are going to be covering every two episodes. So every 2 weeks, we are going to be releasing this bonus episode where you're going to hear all of our thoughts and all of our ideas, theories, whatever criticisms, if we have them. And we're going to have some pretty cool guests on. We have an amazing guest tonight. But before we get to that, a couple housekeeping things. Sawyer, what do we have going on this month? Because it's June.
That's crazy. Oh yeah, it's Pride Month. And as you know, we are very gay. And we have a wonderful, wonderful fundraiser up, A Galaxy of Pride Part 2, raising money for Point of Pride this year, hoping to reach our goal of $2,500. You can help us out. Every single cent counts. The Tiltify link will be in this video description, and it will be everywhere all over our socials, and we will not stop telling you about it until the end of the month. However, we have something even more special on June 26th.
What's that?
Oh my god, it's the Star Wars Spelling Bee, the first of its kind. I think we're gonna have some amazing creators going toe-to-toe with their spelling skills to spell Star Wars words, and it's gonna be so much fun, and it's gonna be a fundraiser event, and there are gonna be really cool prizes that you can win if you are there and you help us reach our goal of donating to this wonderful organization.
So keep an eye on all that stuff this month. Follow our socials if you aren't already. I think now it's the time that we can jump right into it. So our guest tonight, I knew when we decided that we were going to be doing Acolyte recaps that we were going to have them on because they are the president of the Acolyte fan club. They're like since its creation or since its announcement. So this has been, you know, years now that they've been talking about it. So we were like, we got to have them on. Everybody welcome. Natasha.
Hi.
Hello.
Thanks so much for being here. We're so excited.
Oh my God. Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to do this. I have so many thoughts. It's going to be hard to contain in this one conversation, but I'm going to do my best.
Okay. Oh, but before we get started with our conversation, we all received something super, super cool for being super, super cool Acolyte fans from the Star Wars Lucasfilm themselves. And I think we all brought it along. At least one of the things. We all have our fancy Acolyte blankets sent to us in a package from Star Wars. So thanks so much, Star Wars. I've never gotten anything like this before. It was awesome. And I'm so glad that I saw so many of my friends get it too.
So soft. It is so soft.
It is so unbelievable soft. And it's really big too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm always very impressed by the quality of these packages that I see that Star Wars in particular sends out to promote their shows. Yep. They're always like really thoughtful. And I like that. The Acolyte in particular, I don't know if, I guess the intended audience is supposed to be a little bit older because of its content. So I feel like the things that we got were a little bit more like adult-like. Like we got this really cool herbal supplement thing that's supposed to like help relax you. And we got like a cool wooden ramen bowl and we got ramen and a bunch of cool stuff. So I love it.
When I was recording my unboxing, which I've never done before because I've never had a need to do it. So I didn't even know what I was doing, but I was like reading the description because, you know, the card asks you to specifically mention the brand Apothecary. And I was like, I don't know, because I love my red wine. And then I took it out of the video because I was like, should I say this on TikTok? I don't know.
I love that. I think I said something like, I left it in something about it being super gay. I don't know. I left it in.
I mean, we saw that video that they interviewed Leslie Headland and Amanda Stenberg and said like, this is the gayest Star Wars. And Leslie and Amanda were like, yeah.
Yeah,
I guess it is. Y'all. So before we jump into before we jump into our recap of the episode, we are all also big consumers of the High Republic book content, literary content. So we wanted to chat a little bit about, I'd love to know, Natasha and Sawyer, and we'll all share how we all got into the High Republic. What is our favorite High Republic story? Favorite character?
I'm going to shout out another podcast, RuPalp's Pod Race. And I will just say that I was listening a lot to their podcast back in, I want to say 2021. And they just kept talking about the High Republic and like Light of the Jedi and all those books. And, you know, I had kind of gotten off of reading Star Wars books for a while. I have read so much of Legends, and I'm so excited to kind of talk about Legends connections to this. But I just was feeling like, okay, I'm really curious. Like, you're really making this feel like a gay paradise. So let me check out these books. And yeah, I picked up Light of the Jedi. It was three summers ago. I couldn't put it down. I read the whole thing back to back, like one day. I was absolutely in love with it. I would say in terms of characters that really call to me, there's so many, but I think like I want to in particular shout out Keeve Trennis, who is, that is my girl. That's my girl. Shout out to the comics.
I've never had a comic book make me cry before, and the first issue when she gets knighted made me cry. Tears. I was like, so what good magic is in this?
Tears. Unbelievable. And I would say I feel a closeness to the character of Comac, and also, you know what? Lately, Eivar is really speaking to my soul. So I would say, like, maybe those are like my top three at the moment. Yeah.
How excited for Temptation of the Force are you?
I don't even think there are words to convey. I am going to be in a state of disrepair. I want to take the day off of work. Like, I want to, I might actually just need to take 2 days off of work. Who knows? But I'm very excited. I have high expectations, but I know that they will not be let down. But yeah, I'm excited. Eivar,
can't wait
Elsa
for the yearning. Yearning.
Yeah. And the payoff, let's be honest, that's really what I
Sawyer, what about you? How did you get into the High Republic?
So Light of the Jedi was actually the second Star Wars book I read. I read Revan, and about a week later, The Light of the Jedi came out. And you know, the circles I was running in, everybody was like, oh, aren't you gonna get on board? You're getting into lore. Like, you gotta stay on it while it's coming out. It's fresh. And I was like, okay, I don't know. Like, I was interested in the story of Revan, and I picked that up. I actually read Revan before I played KOTOR, which is weird. But I really loved that book. And so I was like, oh, okay, I didn't realize that Star Wars books were so big and so prominent. And there were so many of them. So I picked up Light of the Jedi. I went to the store, or to Barnes & Noble with Hannah. And we went and we bought it. She never finished hers, but I finished mine immediately. I ate that shit up so fast. I was like just blown away by how vivid the storytelling was, and how every single character, didn't matter if they were on one page or 100, they were so fleshed out, so real. And just that opening chapter in Light of the Jedi was unlike anything I had ever seen in Star Wars before. And I was immediately hooked. I, of course, read them all and have been enamored, but also in deep pain ever since.
Yep.
Correct.
And then I read the comics, of course, and I guess we're saying our favorite character. My favorite, Elzar Mann, is one of my favorite Star Wars characters of all time now. I really deeply resonate with him. I love my silly little horny Jedi.
He is that.
Yes. He and Eivar, that's yummy. and as much I'm going to say Markeon. I hate Markeon Roe. I hate him. He's terrible. I think he is more evil than Emperor Palpatine. I have said that since day one. I persist. He is that. He came out of left field for me. I don't see things coming very easily in media. And so him being kind of this clunky, uninterested dude for most of Light of the Jedi, and then you get to the end and you find out that really he's been scheming this whole time and he knows a lot more than he's letting on. I think he's one of the best written villains in all of Star Wars. I think he is evil and disgusting and kind of hot, I guess.
I was also a day oneer. I've been excited about it. I credit friend of the show, Darth Chaco, for my love of the Star Wars books. Back in 2020, he was one of the first like Star Wars creator mutuals that I made, and he invited me to this Star Wars book club that he was doing. And so the first book that we read, the first Star Wars book I read, was Lost Stars. We read Dark Disciple, we read the Thrawn book, we read a couple others, and then Light of the Jedi came out, and it's so different from the other Star Wars books that I've read, but at the same time felt so familiar. And it was so, if you have not read Light of the Jedi, the first like 15 chapters leave you like on the edge of your seat. Like, it's crazy. It's so good. It really gets you hooked. I think my favorite book is probably still The Rising Storm. The Rising Storm or Tempest Runner, I really enjoy as well.
Ooh, that's a
I think
good one.
They're both by Kevin Scott, I realized. I think I just really like his writing style and his prose. But like Lorna D is also a character that like really spoke to me when I listened to the audiobook or the audio drama. But yeah, I love The High Republic. I'm trying to catch up on phase three stuff right now. I just finished I have the storm. I have darkness.
I have darkness.
Yeah. I have darkness. Yeah, and yeah. I've got the other two to read. Other two, or is there just one other one right now before Temptation of the Force?
I think there's just one.
Okay. So I'm not as far behind as I thought, but yeah. I'm working on catching up. Favorite characters. I also will have to say I love Elzar. I love that slutty, pathetic, because I love a pathetic, slutty man. What can I say? But I do also have a soft spot for my sweet baby Belle. And Buriaga, I love them so much, and I love their friendship. And I really appreciate that, like, Belle is a character that has, like, a silly little pet, because I feel like whenever I play a game, like a video game or an RPG or a tabletop or whatever, it's like, how can I get a silly little pet? And I really vibe with that, you know?
Amber.
But let's get right into it. I did want to ask, because Natasha, especially for you, you've been very excited and very vocal online about the Acolyte, but you've also been very vocal, I feel like, about how you were hoping to see like the marketing for this show go, and who you like to see at the premiere as far as like people in our circle or our community that get invited. So I wanted to ask your opinions on how do you think Lucasfilm Star Wars is handling all of that?
Yeah. Let's start with the positive. Let's keep it positive first. I think that, you know, I was wondering how Star Wars was going to handle the marketing around the show, because we just have, you know, I don't want to talk too much about it, but like we have like such a negative corner of our fandom, and particularly a corner of our fandom that just is so incredibly vocally homophobic and sexist and racist and all of these other things. And I was worried that with the kind of casting that they have done for the show, the people who are running the show, like Leslie in particular, being a queer woman who is a showrunner, which is like the first time I feel like we have ever had that in Star Wars, and also just like with all of the creative team behind this, that Lucasfilm might feel resistant to do too much like over marketing of the show because like they just don't want to have to deal with the level of like toxicity that they would maybe receive. And it's actually been really joyful over the last couple of months to see just how active they have been in highlighting Amandla especially, and being able to see her shine and to see her excitement. Like things like the phone call that she got from Hayden, I was like, it's so good. And we've just gotten to see so many aspects of the different actors who are in this and how they came to be in these roles and getting spotlighted. And Leslie is just a seasoned TV Hollywood person, but it has been really beautiful to see how much I feel like Lucasfilm has had shown just such great respect for her and her artistry. And just, I think that they have actually done a really great job of being really engaging and presenting the show in a way that feels like it is honoring the legacy of Star Wars, but also really wanting to bring in like a new audience and knowing that this show has the potential for that, unlike a lot of other things that have come out of Star Wars TV shows recently, because of the fact that this is a High Republic. And while a lot of us are High Republic girlies and have been reading the books, a lot of people haven't really engaged with that. So for a lot of people, this is a completely new, untapped world of Star Wars. So I think that Lucasfilm, Disney, they have actually been like beautifully invested in highlighting the newness and like and all of that. So I've really loved the kind of efforts that I've seen online. All the TV spots, I will be honest, I kind of stopped watching the previews at a certain point because I was like, I want to kind of go in a little fresh. But I just think that a lot of stuff, and also like with knowing that the Phantom Menace's anniversary was this year and finding a way to weave that in to Phantom Menace was also great. So anyway, those are all the positives. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Now, in terms of the premiere, I think it was like really beautiful to see creators there. I'm always happy to see any Star Wars creator at these, like in these spaces, if I'm going to be totally honest, because like I think that a lot of people bring a lot of great positivity, a lot of great discourse. And I guess like one more positive thing, just seeing all or most of the authors at the premiere too was so incredibly important to me. And I think I had posted like, I think like 4 months ago, I was like, I don't care who is at this premiere, but I better see those authors there. I don't care. Like they better be there. So I was really happy about that. I would have liked to see more like Black, you know, and brown queer creators there, you know, and looking at the audience or the creators that were invited, or at least the ones that came, it was, you know, I'll be honest, it was disappointing to not see that there wasn't more of a reflection of what we're seeing on screen. Because like, if we're being honest, like I would say in terms of the people that I know who engage with the High Republic and who have been so completely excited and on board for this, it has been a primarily femme, Black, brown, and a very queer audience. And I just don't think, and which is pretty much what the character is, a reflection of the characters in like these books, but I just don't think we saw that so much at the premiere, which, you know, was disappointing. But I am hopeful that in future premieres, because I am like dead set in making this a multi-season show. If I have to be the sole campaigner making this a multi-season show, I'll do that. there may be more chances for that. But yeah, that would have been nice to see.
I think it speaks to a larger conversation too, when you think about like Star Wars or Lucasfilm, Disney, whatever, they're a company, so they're trying to make money. So they're going to invite the biggest creators with the largest following. And, you know, they did offer, they sent a lot of smaller creators the boxes, which I think is great for marketing.
Absolutely.
But I think it speaks to a larger conversation of like, okay, so the biggest, the creators with the biggest followings in like the Star Wars nerdy sphere are still very white and very male. And so like, it's a paradox, right? Because I guess they want the marketing to reach the most amount of people, but also when you have a cast of characters and creatives behind the show, I would like to see the people that are invited also like be reflected in that way. But hopefully, you know, if they see the response that the Acolyte gets, because it's already got a, what, a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Unbelievable.
It's had amazing. I think even like the Star Wars Twitter and Instagram accounts have been like posting all of the good reviews and seeing the response that people have had to the show. Hopefully that will be a good draw to get more seasons, and then hopefully next time we'll see a more improvement. But I just thought that was an important conversation to have because I wanted to talk about it. I think it's time, y'all. We'll do a little bit of like no spoiler thoughts first, and then we'll get into all the good stuff. So what is everyone's initial thoughts just overall? How did you like the vibe? I really liked things like the opening crawl was very reminiscent of the movies, and it just felt from the beginning, it felt so Star Wars to me. And I know a lot of people are going to make comparisons to Andor because it has this like darker, more serious tone. But, and I loved Andor. Andor is amazing, and there's a place for a show like Andor in Star Wars, but it just didn't give me that same like campy Star Wars feel. And this is kind of giving me both. And so I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, I would really agree with that. I think that this show does such a good balance of really hitting those like really like difficult emotions, like, and really actually bringing a very dramatic element and like a lot of the like darker and more serious tones that I think that we are starting to see in some of the Star Wars content. You know, in the last few years. But I think it's also, yeah, I think it's nice to actually see a show that also can take that serious tone, but be really fun. Like, I laughed so much, like, during both episodes. I thought it was like a great balance. I think the performances, and again, we'll get more into specifics later, but the performances were absolutely incredible. I was like, met my expectations and then went above them. And I just think that it just looks beautiful, like just visually incredibly rich. So yeah, I thought it was great. I'm loving it so far, but yeah.
Yeah. To me, it was very like, first of all, like noting the humor, it felt the love that Leslie Headland has for Star Wars was so prominent in every step of every scene, you know, whether it was callbacks or lines to, yeah, I got a bad feeling about this. Like, you know, it was so. So I feel similarly actually about The Last Jedi. There's a lot of things in that movie that are, okay, this person likes Star Wars. So there was a lot of that, but it was like, you know, it was such a good balance of the darker tones and then the comic relief. And it felt camp. It felt, you know, it felt like a love letter. Like, if it really did feel like a love letter to the prequels, these first two episodes. And you could tell the love that Leslie has for that era and that storytelling. And for me, what stood out is that having the context that maybe not every fan will have, having read all of the High Republic books, this show really feels like the midway point between the High Republic, like the height of the High Republic.
Absolutely, 100%.
And you can feel that in the characterization of the different characters. You can feel that in the atmosphere. You can feel that
in the costuming. The
costuming, yeah. You know, every detail. This is not, I think that was something I was concerned about at first, because I just didn't know, you know, like, I think we've all grown really attached to the High Republic, and we also all have an image of the High Republic in our head from the, there are the comics, but like a lot of that storytelling is just in novels and audio dramas and stuff. So we, how do you translate that into film? But I think they're doing an excellent job, and I, you know, it was really especially exciting for me too. My parents watched it day one as well, because the it's coming out at a reasonable time, and so to have my mom, who isn't like a huge Star Wars fan, but she keeps up with everything, to have her go, wait, this is so good, like right off the bat, that's a great feeling.
Yeah, my mom did the same thing, by the way.
I wanted to note the choreography, the stunt work, the work, everything that they've been able to do in just the first couple episodes have been so good. Like, it really does feel like it doesn't quite have the same like gravitas or flair as the prequels, but I also think that that was purposeful, like how graceful and and really, like, I don't know, they took the care into blending these two time periods, because when you think of like the Phantom Menace or Duel of the Fates, you think of these very like high speed chase type battles with lightsabers, and they're swinging them all over the place and they're jumping and whatever. But then for this, because of the time period, it is still more peaceful. And I think over time, from what I've gathered reading The High Republic and just kind of inferring from these first two episodes, is that they really advise against or tell the Jedi that your lightsaber is your last resort, especially in that very first scene with Indara's fight with Mei. She doesn't get her lightsaber until like the very end. She chooses to rely on her skills as a Jedi and using the Force against Mei instead of the lightsaber. So like, I don't know, it feels like even the stunts and the choreography that they've put in is telling the story.
And one last thing that I'll say, like in this non-spoiler piece, is just I know that Leslie talked a lot, and she said this in interviews before, and I think I remember her saying this at Star Wars Celebration, but she was very intentional in putting people in the writer's room who also had never seen Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And I think it was, I feel like I could see that really, really great balance of not being over reliant on putting things in the story, because like you already know that people are gonna get it, like they're you're like, you just have an expectation of like a Star Wars fan watching this and already coming in with a certain amount of knowledge, and that was one of the things I know I was worried about in terms of it catering too much to book readers, and I don't feel like it did that at all. And not that I was worried it was gonna, really worried it was gonna do that, but you know, I love Star Wars. I'm not gonna spend time criticizing other Star Wars shows, but I will just say that like I feel like there have been other shows that have come out recently that I think have been pretty reliant on like
people coming. Definitely in. Agree with you.
So it felt good to not have that experience.
I think we can transition into that right now, and I would love to hear, since we're in spoiler territory, I would love to hear everybody's favorite like standout moments. And I think because we're doing both episodes one and two, you don't have to just start with episode one, like whatever is immediately speaking to you. Natasha, you want to go first?
Oh my gosh, one standout moment. I'm going to be honest. I feel like I don't know if other people would call this a standout moment, but for me, there was the scene where Osha was on the prison transport and all the other prisoners were like, screw you, we're getting on this, like, you know, escape pod and, you know, peace out. Mm-hmm. And they left her behind. And there was that one prisoner that was left and she had the opportunity to just leave him, get on her escape pod and just like be done with it. And instead she makes the decision to like go back and like, you know, take the thing off of his face and help him. And then he immediately ditches her and like gets on the escape pod, leaving her behind. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it honestly, that is like a moment that has like that like really resonated with me. And again, I don't know if it was purposeful or not, but the intentionality potentially of this, you know, this young Black woman doing all of this, to risking herself and her own safety to actually support and help this other person, only for that person to be like, no, your safety doesn't actually mean anything to me, like I'm leaving you behind and I'm going to do what like protects me, is just like such a Black femme experience, especially the intentionality of making that prisoner that leaves her behind like a white guy. Just mm-hmm. felt on purpose to me. But yeah, if I had to like point out one moment that actually did like stick with me, I would say it's that one.
I think we're gonna see that come up again. I feel like we've heard about this fire that happened that seemingly killed Osha and May's family, or each other thought that the other person was dead. I feel like we are going to see what they were like as children and how they were probably, maybe May was like that too. Cause I don't believe the story that May was the one that started this fire. It feels very Kylo Ren to me, in the way that maybe that was how it was perceived. But like, if you've read the Kylo Ren comics, you know that he didn't, it's kind of let up in the left open-ended on whether or not he actually set fire to the temple. It feels very much like if it was him, it was not. It was a very subconscious like thing. Correct. That happened. He did not do it intentionally. So I feel like we're going to follow up with that moment, or that type of moment in the flashback.
Yeah. But I mean, I will say, like, you know, I mentioned it earlier just from like a reference and cameo point of view, but like, or Easter egg point of view, but there is a lot of like Last Jedi-ness to the show.
For sure.
Favorite moments, that sequence with May versus Soul was really, really great. Incredible. The choreography, but also the conversation. I am having trouble, like, so I'm just sitting here thinking about it. Who is my favorite character? The characterization is so High Republic. It is just masterful, every single one of these characters. But Soul and the way that he interacts with Osha as almost like a fatherly figure, even though he was her master. And he carries that through to how he interacts with May. And I didn't get the sense that he was doing it because they look the same. I think he just has compassion for Osha, and that
absolutely
translated into Osha's compassion for her sister, who she's just found out is actually not dead. And I've seen the interviews where everybody is praising the heck out of Lee Jung Jae's performance, and that is so evident right away. He is gonna be, I am worried for Master Soul, but I have a feeling that I'm gonna hurt very badly after this show.
Speaking of Soul, I would like to say something, because I, listen, as I was watching it, I just vibes, just off of vibes, I was like, wow, Seoul is reminding me a lot of Qui-Gon. Did mm-hmm. not know how many Qui-Gon haters that mm-hmm. I have on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Some of my friends, mm-hmm. I won't call you out by name because I think everyone's entitled to their own opinion.
You can call them out in our DMs.
I mean, you can just look it up on Twitter. I didn't realize how many people like dislike Qui-Gon, and so there were people that were upset over people making those comparisons. However, in interviews, Lee Jung-jae has said that he studied Qui-Gon and Liam Neeson and his performance in The Phantom Menace as inspiration. So, folks, I know, I understand if you don't rock with Qui-Gon, that's fine. But it's just there. The vibes are there because whether you like
that was the intention.
Yeah. You know, like you can make all the comparisons you want and you can criticize Qui-Gon, and maybe Seoul isn't going to act like, he's not going to be textbook Qui-Gon Jinn, right? But like the presence that he brings to the character, I think is very similar.
Yeah, but let's talk about Vernestra, because I know that there's a lot of people who are a little hesitant because she kind of takes on the role in the past in these first two episodes as the kind of stoic and all business kind of Jedi that we're used to seeing in the prequel era. And I think a lot of people were surprised by that, but I wasn't.
Look at her master.
Yeah. I mean,
look at how stellar it was.
Look at everything she has seen happen.
I know.
Probably will happen to her in like the rest of phase three. Like, what happened to my sweet baby angel to make you?
I think that because the High Republic team has done such a great job writing these characters and making them so beloved, and these fan bases that have been built around them, I can understand the disappointment in seeing one of your faves do something that you might see as, you know, problematic, or whatever you want to call it. But the High Republic and everything that happens in that era, including whatever will unfold in this show, is meant to demonstrate to us why the Jedi were the cops of the Republic in the prequels. And that makes sense to me, that after you live through these traumas, starting when you're just 16 years old, it makes sense to me that you're going to fall back into a state of more rules, being more strict.
Yeah, and one thing that and I'm gonna try to keep this spoiler free in terms of the books, because like I want to acknowledge that like not everybody reads at the same, you know, pace. But you know, I will say that in one of the more recent books, Eye of Darkness, there is a situation in which a Jedi goes to the council wanting to do a thing, and the council is like, no, I actually think that's a bad idea. And eventually that Jedi ends up doing that thing to not good results. Mm-hmm. and like majorly, majorly, majorly not good results. And we kind of see like little nuggets of that happening throughout the course of the High Republic, where all of these mistakes or miscalculations or bad luck or whatever, these things keep happening, where the Jedi do this thing and then it kind of blows up in their faces. Mm-hmm. And I think given the context of that, I can understand how the order becomes a little harder over time.
Yeah.
It is a trauma response. That mm-hmm. is like what is happening here. And I think that I do understand why people are having like this sort of reaction to Vernestra. Like, I think that you're going immediately from seeing this sort of like youthful, slightly rebellious, you know, like, you know, young person to this person without like really understanding the whole scope of her experience yet. But I think that there are some things, especially as High Republic fans, we should be able to infer in like where she is now based on like where she is in the stories. And I want to also have some grace, though, for people who have not engaged with the books at all, are only seeing this character this way, and understanding like why there is frustration. I guess what I would say in both of those situations is I will see what happens, but I actually trust this writer's room to connect those dots more directly. Mm-hmm. And they would never have added Vernestra in this story in the first place if she wasn't meant to be a connector from the beginnings of the High Republic to this end point of the High Republic.
Yeah,
she's here for a reason.
Yeah.
So like, I for think sure. that we are going to see those connections. Like, just, we need to give the show some time to do that.
Picking Vernestra, picking a character that means so much to the High Republic fandom and that has resonated with so many people, and who is the first Aero Ace character in Star Wars, like, confirmed, not the first Ace character, but the first Aero Ace, I believe. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Really cool. Yeah, it's really dope. Cool.
All right. What about the other characters, though? We've like just been yapping our asses off over here, which I guess is what the point of the show is.
Can we talk about the Yord Horde?
Oh,
because that is taking Twitter by storm, like literally overnight. Not just Twitter.
That's like that's the whole world is.
It's gone everywhere. It started with our dear friends Kells. And I'm trying to think of who else. Hayden, like a bunch of like friends that were like a bunch of people that we're friends with, started this hashtag Yord Horde for our favorite robe steaming Jedi from the Acolyte, and it has just completely gone off the rails to the point where like I don't even know when it started. Like in this just the very last couple of days, and last night Daphne Keen, who plays Jeki, put on her Instagram story a video with Charlie Barnett, I think is his name, the actor, with the hashtag Yord Horde. And then the official Star Wars account is tweeting about it. And I'm just like, this is literally the best thing ever. It's so dumb and it's so fun.
It's amazing. I have friends who are not even Star Wars people sending me Yord Horde memes. Like, that's how wild this is.
It's... What do you guys think it is about his character that are making people like resonate with him and love him so much?
I mean, he is hot.
Yeah.
Like, that's number one. That's gotta be, you know, I was not expecting that. I had seen the Yord Horde, you know, I'd seen our friends like who had seen it the day before they went to the early showing of it. And they were like, can't wait for guys to people ever to join the Yord Horde. And I'm like, okay. But he like wasn't a character that was on my radar really. Because, well, for one, like, you know, I loved Squid Game and I loved Lee Jung-jae's performance. So, like, he's probably the person I was the most excited to see in the show. But he just, I was not familiar with his game. So, like, he shows up and, like, I was like, oh, but he's also comic relief. And, he's comic relief and he's kind of dorky, but he's kind of like also, you know, he's got something going on with Osha, and you know, there is like a so Avar Elzar moment there.
100%
in that ship, in that bunk.
Yep.
In her bedroom.
In her bedroom.
Come on.
He walked in there alone.
And I don't even remember his Padawan's name. I'm so sorry. So I think it's like a combination of all of his things. But I'm not gonna lie. He's hot, and he's steaming his robe, and he knows he's hot. So
yeah, I feel like the hotness is definitely a factor, but I do feel if he was just hot, that wouldn't be enough. I think it is the dorkiness. I think it's like the. It's the dorkiness. He gives a very like, he gives an energy of like, hey, I'm like that kid in class that's going to like ask for homework like on a Friday afternoon at the end of class. Like, he just has like a very specific kind of energy. But he's just so funny too. He manages to, he gives that sort of like, again, like I was saying, like the show just has like a really good balance of like the like emotion and the campiness. And he just in and of just like as a singular being encapsulates all of that in one person.
Yeah. I'd agree. He seems like very, to me, like the more I've sat on it, he is like the, he's an Elzar Stellan love child.
Oh, a hunt.
Like, yeah.
Correct.
As soon as the scene with Osha happened, but then also the scene where he has his shirt off, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I know where this is going in my brain.
I love how his character and Jackie's character like kind of play off of each other. I feel thought, maybe like this is just my neurodivergence like projecting onto them, but I was like, these are just like two different flavors of autism like talking to each other, because you have Yord is like, I'm the rule follower and you have to follow the rules, and then Jackie is just like completely straight, like blunt, like she like kneels down to like talk to a kid and you think she's gonna be all like sweet, like, oh, it's okay, and she's just like, where the fuck, where is this, where are we going, like, so. And I was like, wow, Jackie is so me coded, because that is, as a teacher, that is also how I talk to children, just straight up, you know. I'm like, sometimes I forget that they're three, and I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta raise my octave a little bit, make myself sound a little bit nicer.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I consider myself personally part of the Yord Horde, I'm gonna be honest with you. But I love and appreciate them. I really do love the, and I kind of hope that the somehow this feels a little bit more like obvious, or like they point to it a little bit more, but the Padawan experience and kind of getting out all of your, you know, sexual energy like during that time it is a real thing that happens. And I am curious because like it's very clear at a certain point the Jedi Order gets a lot more restrictive in how they want Jedi to even be in relationship or what have you together. So yeah, I'm kind of curious if they're going to be more explicit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think I seem to recall Leslie Headland mentioning that aspect in interviews leading up to the show. So I hope that we're going to get that, because I also think that there is still so much of a misconception about the attachment and what Jedi were and weren't allowed to do. But there is something to be said about the fact, like, I don't think this stage of the Star Wars, like the timeline, I don't think we're at like Cantum Sai, go leave the Order, have your relationship and come back.
Right.
I don't think we're doing that anymore in the Order here. Yeah. But there still seems to be, you know, with Sol being so attached to Osha and, you know, and whatever's going on, hopefully they explore that more. But you can even kind of, I would even argue that you're seeing that shift in Jackie, because Jackie is like, do I have permission to speak? Like, you know, like like a hesitance in her that Sol very obviously is like, chill, you're good. But that to me, because she's so young and she's like the youngest member of the crew, that kind of, she's representing that shift a little bit.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm curious about that. I do feel like in a lot of ways Sol being there is maybe representative of that sort of the kind of end of that like older age, that former age of like the High Republic, And like looking at Jackie as maybe sort of like the entry point into this like new era. That's like a really, that's a really good point. And kind of going back to sort of the attachment thing, I feel like that's just a hot topic in the Star Wars fandom forever. Everybody fights over it. I feel like every 2 months, like people get stirred up again over the attachment argument. What I really appreciate about Leslie Headland's approach to talking about it on the show so far anyway, is I think she really understands the nuance in a way and is able to articulate it actually in a way that I don't think every piece of Star Wars media is always like so great at like kind of articulating the nuance there. Which is why I think that there's always so many arguments and confusion around detachment. But even sort of the simplicity of Sol talking about like how important our memories are and like how it is important that we hold them and that they are important as like learnings that we need to like keep with us. And I think I am really looking forward to seeing the relationship of Sol and Osha in particular, and how that kind of continues to sort of how Sol decides that he is going to navigate that relationship with Osha, because like he already seems like he is in this like really like weird space right now, like with his relationship to the Jedi Order and his own sort of attachments to what's happening right now. But yeah, I think that this is like a long overdue like sort of exploration that they're having, and that's going to lead us all also into sort of the larger conversation about like the Jedi and who they represent, like what they represent in the galaxy, which I think is going to be, we're going to have a lot of people who do not disagree or who do disagree in the fandom.
I would like to talk about the twin kind of reveal, because that was something that was mostly kept out of the marketing.
Yep.
I think they dropped the ball a little bit when they started releasing more TV spots, and we started seeing, like, Amandla even was talking about her, like, the Pip droid that she has, which to me felt very, like, I don't know, May's character doesn't seem like a character that would have, like, a tiny, cute little droid companion. And then I think, like, even Funko Pop released, like, some Acolyte Pops, and there was it said, like, Amandla would always say that, I'm playing the character of May, but then I think Funko released some like previews of Funko Pops, and one of them said Osha. And even on some of the trailers, if you have the subtitles on, it would say like May and Osha.
Yeah.
And so then people started speculating about the twin thing. I love, however, that Amandla wore two different outfits to the premiere.
Yeah. And like changed. That was brilliant.
So brilliant for just like I don't want to say a marketing, just like a creative choice, because she's playing two characters. Like, I love that for them. That was amazing. I was a little bit nervous, I think, for the type of like twin reveal, because to me, it's a little bit of a tired trope. I mean, it's a common Star Wars thing. Obviously, we started with Luke and Leia, and then in the Legends, you have Jason and Jaina Solo. For example, one of my least favorite movies is The Prestige. Like, spoilers if you've never seen that, the Christopher Nolan movie, but like there's a secret evil twin reveal, and I was just like, I watched this whole movie just to get that. Pretty Little Liars did it, you know. I'm just like, if they can do it right, and I think they didn't save it for like the end of the show, or like, oh, just kidding, there's been two of them the whole time. They kind of got it out of the way right in the beginning, and now they can play on the relationship between the two characters. So I think that they're headed in the right direction. But I wanted to hear your thoughts on did you guys expect that? What do you think about it?
I will say, so I had mentioned earlier, I, at a certain point, I really started avoiding some of the marketing and like not watching like the, I think like really, it was only that initial trailer. And then the, I think like they showed us like the first like 5-10 minutes or whatever it was, like in the Phantom Menace. Thing, but other than that, I have actually avoided seeing anything. So I was totally surprised. Like I did not know that they were gonna do that, and I was actually relieved that it was like a twin thing, because at one point in the story, when we see the big fight where Master Indara is killed, and then it shifts to Osha being on the ship, and I was concerned that there was like some sort of like, oh, like she has like another personality, or like or like. There's something closed off where she doesn't know that she's doing these things. Like, I thought like it was something like that. And I was like, I don't want to see anything that. So I actually was like relieved when it ended up being like, oh, it's just like another Star Wars twin. Okay.
But you know what? I am very interested to see where this goes. And I think that this is a good point to transition into kind of our last thing that we wanted to focus on, which is like theories. Now that the show is out and we have content to go off of, and we, you know, there, the marketing has been very gung-ho about, oh, it unraveled the mystery. And I think the mystery was never who kills the Jedi. The mystery is in what happened in the fire, what caused the fire, and why is May going after these four Jedi specifically, but also what's going on with the twins, because something's going on with the twins. So, you know, we are, there's already been on the line some theories that are brewing. I guess the first question would be, do y'all think that Osha and May are a dyad?
Yeah, I mean, that is the very, it's a very popular theory, and it feels so obvious that I'm almost like, like, maybe it's something else. It just feels like too obvious to me. But it would also just make a lot of sense. And just because something just, you know, makes the most sense doesn't mean that like that's not the thing that's happening. Or that there isn't a way to make it deeply compelling. I think that there are a lot of things that are pointing us to them being a dyad. I think the way that their memories are so hyperly linked together, I think the way in which they're able to kind of connect with each other, like through the confines of like space and time, right? There is something there that feels so specifically like pointing to like a dyad. And I am, if that is the case, if they are, and it is looking very likely that they are, this will be the first time I feel like we're really going to be able to explore like what that means and like the power that like a dyad can like be when they are together, because outside of, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but like other than Reylo, like I just don't think we have seen that like in live action Star Wars anywhere. So like I think that that is really exciting to me, because like I wonder like what is that going to actually look like.
The only other comparison that I think is even relevant would be Revan and Basta Lashan from KOTOR. And that, while I do believe that was the inspiration for the dyad concept, it's not quite the same, but they did have a like force bond where they would, you know, share dreams and they were more powerful together. But that's not live action. That's a video game that is 20 plus years old. But yeah, and I think that if slash when the story goes down that road, I think that since we do know already that Palpatine was trying so hard to create a dyad, and this is before his time, I could see however this dyad, say it is a dyad, I am curious to see if that ends in a way that is advantageous to the Sith, that it would be introduced to Palpatine when he becomes the apprentice of Plagueis, that he would, I see there being a connection.
Possibly. Yeah. I didn't think about it that way until now.
I didn't until just 5 minutes ago, and then I felt so smart.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm not like attached to the idea of a dyad, them being a dyad. I see a lot of the connections and a lot of the same like imagery that was used with Rey and Ben in the sequels. And so I can definitely see that there are strings that are leading us in that direction. I think my only, and this is just a personal preference, I like the idea that a dyad is like two people that come from like completely different backgrounds that have like never met each other before, are tied together in the Force in that way. So with Mei and Osha being twins, that kind of like takes away from that. But, and I also see like Luke and Leia had such a strong Force bond that they could like find each other, right? Because we see an Empire, Leia was able to just find exactly where Luke was. Which that's not to say that they can't still be a dyad. That like, for that's just my personal, like what I enjoy a lot about the idea of the dyad. If we're comparing like Rey and Ben, and then the only other comparable thing that we have in Star Wars media would be like Revan and Bastila, who are also two characters that like met each other through these like destiny kind of situations. But I love that idea that it'll tie into the history of the Sith somehow with Palpatine creating this dyad. And I know there are people that aren't going to love that because there are some people that just, they don't care enough to like have any threads that connect back to the Rise of Skywalker and like why Palpatine was able to return. Like I totally get it. I understand. But I'm someone who would love more connective tissue between like all of these timelines and bringing it all the way up until like the farthest in the timeline that we have right now, which is the Rise of Skywalker. So
listen, all I have to say is those people clearly do not remember Triclops and Ken Palpatine from the expanded universe.
Oh my God.
Other theories.
Yeah, I want to talk about the fire. Like that that is like that is just burning in my mind so much right now. Yeah.
That's going to be an edit.
I'm really curious to see what the Jedi's role was in this fire, because like I think that it was more active than they definitely play a role, and I'm not saying that the show isn't like leading us in that direction, but I do not believe that Mei was responsible for that fire at all. I think that the something that happened, and I'm not even necessarily saying it's the Jedi's fault. In fact, there's a part of me that wonders if whoever this master is, whoever Mei is, you know, connected with right now, that this person or somebody that this person is in connection with, maybe a certain group of witches, who knows, like maybe actually had more of an active role in causing that fire and causing like the twins to be split up in the way that they were. It feels like this was an intentional act, but in whatever happened, somehow they made it seem like the Jedi had some blame in like what happened.
Yeah, and, I mean, yeah. That's a really good point and a good way to phrase it. I haven't given this too much thought, but sitting here talking about it, the Jedi, this story must end with the Jedi still standing, right?
Yeah.
We already know how the Jedi fall. So, but it also has to end with the Sith winning something as well. So I am curious to see how that, you know, it can't just be, oh, the Jedi did it, because then, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I agree. And I also think it's going to end with the Jedi thinking that they did the thing, like, yes, thinking that they got rid of the thing, no, which is why, like, it is such a surprise what happens in the prequels.
Yeah.
So I think that that is definitely, like, where things are going to end. But yeah, I'm really curious to, like, really get to at what the root of the fire was. But I do think that whoever the master is, or the people that they are connected to, are involved in, like, what mm-hmm. happened.
Do we think the master is a red herring for the actual master?
I do think it's a red herring. I feel like a lot of Star Wars has just been doing a lot of red herrings lately in their media, which is now making me hyperly suspicious of everything. Mm-hmm. But it also just seems so early and obvious, and, like, we're not seeing who this person is. I am incredibly convinced that whenever the witches come into the story, that they are actually going to be, like, an instrumental piece, more so than we even think they're going to be.
Hey, I'm just thinking about this now. They are giving me, like, major Bene Gesserit vibes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Of being
the
ones that are pulling the strings. And, like, I didn't see this until someone posted about it on Twitter, but the character that Jodie Turner-Smith is playing is, like, they're calling her, like, Mother Anaseya or Anaseya, mm-hmm. which is Osha's last name, so I didn't even put it together. Yeah. That's probably their fucking mom. And I was like,
yeah,
this is crazy. And also, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but when May and Sol have their fight and May is, like, she gets knocked down to the ground and her hair is kind of, like, pushed out of the way. Oh, she has, like a spiral tattoo marking on her forehead, which is the same spiral that we see on those witches', like, hands or arms or whatever. And I'm like, there's got to be more to this than we're seeing so far. I want to point out,
I'm putting on my tinfoil hat because I'm about to say something crazy, but continue.
I want to point out, like, I'm so intrigued by this event and what happened, because none of the Jedi that Mei has faced so far that we've seen in the last two episodes seem to be very surprised to see her. And even Corbin, I can't remember the actor's name, but Tommen Baratheon's character even said, like, I've been waiting for you.
Yeah.
And then he would rather fucking die
than
face, like, the consequences of whatever he thinks he did. Now, like we said, do I think the Jedi are going to be, like, 100% responsible for whatever happened? No, but they're obviously the reason that he is even in this position is because that's what he thinks happened. And I'm so, like, intrigued with, like, how dark are they going to take this, you know?
Yeah, and Kel Naka, like, also is just, it feels like, pulled a Luke Skywalker and was just like, I'm out of here.
I'm out. Yeah. I see people calling him Shrek.
Oh, what?
I see people calling him Shrek.
No, he's giving me... Okay, listen, I understand that you did not finish KOTOR, but in KOTOR, you go to Kashyyyk, and in the Shadowlands...
Oh, I did. I did meet...
Oh, you did meet Jolie Bindo.
I think so.
Okay.
I got that far.
Well, yeah, you go to the Shadowlands, you meet this guy who lives in a fucking tree, and it's Jolie Bindo, and he's a Jedi who's mad at the Order, and he's a grumpy old man, and when Kel Naka came out, and he was like, I was like, it, Leslie Headland is a KOTOR stan. so Jolie Bindo. But I put on my tinfoil hat, because this is what I'm going to say. The mother, they're calling her the mother. Okay. Who do we know is the mother from phase two of the High Republic?
Yeah.
Okay. Obviously. Yeah. Great. Okay. The Path of the Open Hand. Awesome. Yeah. The Path of the Open Hand has the three lines on the three waves. Great. Cool. That becomes three lightning strikes, and that becomes the Nile. Awesome. These people are clearly involved with the Force. I don't know how. Mm-hmm. I think these people are remnants of the Nile that have some connection with the Force, are perhaps leaning more towards the Path of the Open Hand culty type situation, recognize when the twins are born that they are a dyad, and they have set this whole scheme up, and it's all because of that.
Yeah.
They're manipulating the Force. And the other reason I think that is because Leslie Headland has cited Kreia as one of her major Sith influences, and Kreia wanted to make the Force her bitch. And okay, I'm done with my tinfoil.
No, I love it. No, I love it. Yeah,
I'm seeing it.
I mean, as a person who constantly defends phase two of the High Republic, I am loving this. And I think seeing this sect of witches and whatever sort of religious order they have, I have come in assuming that they have some connection to the Path of the Open Hand. I think honoring that heritage all the way back to that period of time, pre-Nile, makes a lot of sense. I think that they have, I'm going to guess that they have a completely different relationship to the Force, whereas mm-hmm. The Path of the Open Hand was just we don't manipulate the Force in any way. I don't think that they are carrying that same sort of belief system at all. I think it is almost the other way around. It's just how can we control the Force? How can we manipulate it for our needs?
I see that. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. What were you gonna
say? Just going to say, I see that as the natural progression of it starts with the cult that's we're not going to touch the Force. It goes to the Nile, who are we are going to bully the Force. And then we're going to control the Force.
Now we're going to control the Force. Yeah. So I'm really excited about that. And I hadn't even brought up the mother element yet, but I absolutely think the fact that they have continued, they've had these memories of, or at least that one, targeted memory of themselves as children. And we have heard there about their parents dying, but we have not seen that happen yet. Mm-hmm. We have not seen their parents in any visions or anything like that yet. So I feel the whole fire was a ruse. All of it. I think my only curiosity is around why was Osha able to sort of just be with the Jedi and then leave the Jedi and kind of live her life without anyone at any point trying to approach her. What is the reason for, it feels like maybe intentionally keeping the twins apart if they are more powerful together. I just have a lot of there are a lot of pieces. I'm I have a lot of curiosity.
Maybe she left the order because she was banging Yord.
Just all over the temple, and people were complaining about the noise.
Written fan fictions like that, so stranger things have happened.
Well, y'all, to wrap things up, what do we think maybe might happen in the next few episodes? I feel Star Wars has done a pretty good job at not revealing too much in their trailers. I feel like everything that we get usually in the trailer is only stuff from like the first couple of episodes.
Agree.
I think we're going to see a lot of the shots that we saw of, like, in the forest, and maybe the introduction of the I'm calling him Ultron Sith because he sounds like fucking Ultron right now to me. Like that scene and the other things with the forest and. But like, so I'm so stoked to see like what is going to happen on the back half of the show, because I don't think we've seen anything from it yet.
Yeah, I mean, I do think I agree that I think that confrontation that we've seen, like where they all like take out their like lightsabers, I think that's going to happen in like maybe the next episode. That's my prediction. I hate to say it. I don't think that Cal Naka is long for this world. I am so sad. I do not want to see our only Jedi Wookiee that we have seen in like live action not make it. But I just do not think he is like going to make it.
I disagree with you, actually.
Ooh, I want to be wrong about this.
Here's what I'm thinking. We lost two Jedi in two episodes. They're only four Jedi to kill. I don't think he's going to survive the show, but I do think he's going to survive this encounter.
Yeah. I would believe that. I just don't think he's going to make it out of the show. But like, yes, you're.
But on the subject, where the fuck is Buriaga? Because Wookiees live to be 400 years old.
I would like, I know that like Leslie Headland said that this isn't going to be a show like full of cameos and stuff like we've seen.
Yeah.
But like, let's be real. Buriaga Yoda, is like,
aren't you?
Buriaga is the face of like the kids' books, like the children's like coloring books. So, or not coloring books, but the picture books.
Yeah.
I always knew that like he was going to be fine, because how fucked up would that be to kill off a character and then not be able to publish more kids' like picture books with him? But I would like to see like another like Wookiee Jedi in the background, and like every like book readers will know who it is. You know, I don't need more than that.
I'm just looking forward to it. I don't think I have any more huge predictions on my end. I think the Path of the Open Hand is involved. That's my biggest one, and I think that. What's his name? The character that Manny plays.
How do you pronounce it?
Kimir? Something like that.
Kimir? But I think like he is absolutely involved.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It is so obvious that it's involved. He's just giving me...
Haunting he looked when he realized that Osha was not Mei, and he goes, "You look just like her." I was like, there's a reason. And everyone's questioning, like, why did they hire him to play this role? Because he's normally, like, a very... What we've seen from him in his sitcom Community? No, The Good Place. No, but we saw... The Good Place. He's like a very comedic actor. I've not watched either. I know I would love Community and The Good Place. I just haven't gotten to them.
Oh my God.
But like people are like, "Oh, why are they why did they hire him for this?" And I'm like, "There is that line, that like just sinister performance in that one singular line is like, oh, that's why. There's more to him than what meets the eye."
Oh,
to
me.
I felt the sense that he knew immediately.
Yeah,
and I think he was playing with her in 20 years. Like,
absolutely.
But also his reflexes when Mei attacks him, like,
to me, if the prior scene didn't give it away, that gave it away to me.
Yes.
Because I was just like, no, you're not just some smuggler. Like, something else going on here.
I got those vibes from the first like image we saw of his character too,
because
people like, oh, like his this description of his character was like he's like a shop owner or like something, that I was just like, I don't know, I just feel like he already looks kind of slimy. He's something's going on.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, the fact that he knew that he was being toyed, like played with, and he gave up Mei's location gives me like, you're turning out to be disappointing. You're not doing what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. And like, even when she was just like, oh, it would be a good idea if you could keep this like between us or whatever, he was just like, yeah, sure. Like, I mean, like, there's just, yeah, there's just definitely, there's a vibe there. Yeah, he was giving me, I don't know if you guys are like Rings of Power girlies. I very much am. But he was giving me Sauron in Rings of Power.
Yes, energy. No, you're so right. Yeah. He's like very, it's a perform, everything he does is a performance.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he can put on these different characters for like when it, what fits.
Correct.
In the story or what character you're interacting with. I didn't think about that, but you're so right.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. One last thing. And then this is the last thing I'll say. I promise.
This is now officially our longest episode and it's supposed to be a short one.
We knew this was going to happen, y'all. Fine.
This is what you get for inviting me to talk about this show.
This is what you get when you have, like, yes, but, like, also, you put three queer people to talk about the High Republic. Like, we are the demographic.
Happy Pride Month!
Happy Pride! Oh my God. Okay, my last thing. I feel like I have not talked enough about Amandla. Like, I feel like I've not been doing my due diligence. I think she's incredible, but like, I think in particular, because we brought up the scene where Osha, you know, engages with Manny's character, her ability to come into a scene playing a twin, playing another twin, like, was just like the layers of that performance was absolutely incredible. And like, she blew me away, like her ability to play a character that is just so righteously angry, and like also like it, you know, just being able to see a Black femme character just be allowed to just be angry is just like my favorite thing ever. And but being able to also show so many different shades of vulnerability depending on the character that she was playing. And yeah, her performance is just on another level. Truly Orphan Black inspired.
Like, oh,
so,
yeah.
So good. I'm so excited to see all of the different things that she does with these performances.
I honestly truly believe that and we did see some of this recognition with Andor.
Yep.
I would not be surprised if we see Amandla and Lee Jung-jae in the award circuit
this next year.
Well, y'all, with that, I think it's safe to say that we all love The Acolyte. We're all big fans here in this house. We are
forcing you to like it.
Yeah, we are.
That's what someone said to me earlier. So,
but this is
propaganda.
Yeah, I want the gay agenda to be real in Star
Wars. Oh, did you see that one comment that was like, that one tweet that was like, oh, this is just like gay and like communist, like whatever. And someone was like, you made it sound so fucking cool. Like, I want to watch it more now.
I want to watch that show.
Yeah. Well, everyone, thank you all so much for tuning in. We should be back with episodes 3 and 4 in a couple of weeks. If you have any questions or any things that you would like us to talk about, maybe there's stuff that we didn't talk about in these first two episodes that we can address next time. If you have any theories, leave them in the comments. Tag us, DM us, whatever, because we want to hear your thoughts and we want to talk about it. Natasha, you're awesome. Thank you so much for being our guest. Can you let the people know where we can find your content? You got anything cool you're working on coming up?
Yeah. Honestly, just going to be on socials talking about this show for the next couple of
weeks. I love it.
You can find me on Twitter, NKNAPPER. And you can find me on TikTok at NMKNA PP. So yeah, I'm there talking about this pretty much.
Yeah, we love it. Yes. Thank you guys so much, and we'll yap with you all next time. Good night.